A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete!
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Comedians of Law podcast, episode 69.
Oh boy. 69.
Oh boy, I'm here with Kevin Israel.
What's going on, Maddie? How we doing?
I am Matt Ritter. 69 is the position we had to sleep in the bed that we shared at the hotel in Vandy last night.
It was very romantic.
Yeah, it was. I slept closer to the door, which was pretty windy. It was pretty windy. We slept in kind of a ghetto area there in Nashville, didn't we?
Yeah, you picked a bit of a suspect motel.
I've been known to pick a few suspect motels in my day. You know, I...
Lest anybody think that Comedians at Law travels in style.
And I didn't even bring a jacket. That was pretty dumb.
Yeah, well, we both proved our naivete to American geography by thinking that Tennessee was going to be warm.
Yeah, it was in the 30s. By the way, everybody, we were just in Tennessee doing a show for Vanderbilt Law School. Thank you so much for having us. That was a tremendous show.
Yeah, it was a great, great show. I think the students all had a good time.
Yeah, they had a keg, which is so cool.
Big shout out to Big Sexy Gunner and Legally Blonde.
Yeah, they know who they are. They're probably listening. Yeah, we played a game. For those of you out there who have had us at shows or thinking about having us shows, you know, in the past we've done a lot of stand-up, but we've been experimenting with other things to do at school. We did a sort of mock interview game. It's kind of like a game show, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think they had fun. I had fun with it.
Yeah, so that was cool. You know, really kept the mood loose. And, you know, we're looking forward to doing a lot more shows this coming year at schools.
Yeah, and that, you know what, I put out the invitation to student bar presidents to come on the podcast so we can start meeting some of our potential clients.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, we also took over the Only in Law School site, and we're kind of building our legal comedy empire here.
Yes, yes. Slowly, one by one, we will take over all that's legal and funny.
It wasn't the empire I imagined as a little kid, but it's an empire.
No, yeah, this isn't what I had really set myself up for when I was 10.
You know, look, I'm sure Crazy Eddie didn't think he was going to take over the low-end electronics business, but you know what? That's the way it goes.
Damn it, he did, and he was insane.
Yeah, his prices were insane. Our prices are insane for these
shows. Our prices are insane. We are, you know what? We are a bargain.
Yeah, we are the Crazy Eddies of the legal entertainment world.
the giant juggernaut of the legal entertainment world.
And allegedly, Alex crushed it at a bar association gig in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah, it was the Augusta Bar Association. Yeah. He went down there.
Tweet at us. Let us know how Alex did at the Augusta Bar Association if anybody was down there.
Yeah, if you're listening to us. And if you're a Vanderbilt a student and you saw us, tweet at us and let us know what you think. And if there's stuff you want to see in our show next year, or if you wanted to be involved and you weren't, let us know.
Yeah, do you think there was anybody who wanted to be involved that we left out? I think we got everybody involved.
Yeah, I think everybody had a very personal experience in that show.
Yeah. So this is a good week for news stories. We have a couple shows coming up that we have to tell you about.
Yes.
We've got these Arizona shows, Tempe Improv, Wednesday, January 29th, January 30th, Stand Up Live in Phoenix. Me, Matt Storrs, a couple of other members of our crew. We've got a couple of local lawyer comics, a dean of Arizona Law School.
Wow.
She's assistant dean, Nancy Stanley. She's doing a bit on our set. Awesome. And then at our Tempe show, we have a comedian who's also a lawyer named Bob Howard. So you can come out and see us there, and you can get tickets on their site or comediansatlaw.com. That's it for my end.
I don't think people realize how many comedian lawyers there actually are.
Yeah, there are probably about 100 nationwide. Nah, probably less.
What do you think it is that a lawyer and a comedian, that equation works?
Well, you know, there's a misery element, maybe. There's that. But there's also the logical mind. You know, working a joke is very much, I guess, sort of analytical, critical thinking.
Yeah. I was going to say ego.
Ego is huge. Yeah, definitely. Also, but I think it's mostly the darkness. which would lead nicely into our first story, I think, if we want to go that route.
Oh, we're going to start dark, huh?
Yeah, let's start dark. Let's jump into the news.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Well, this one comes to us off of CNN. They did a story on lawyers committing suicide, and apparently suicide rates are jacking up amongst lawyers more now than ever before. According to the article, prominent lawyers keep turning up dead. They came once a month in Oklahoma around 2004. South Carolina lost 6 lawyers within 18 months before July 2008, and Kentucky has seen 15 known lawyer suicides since 2010. I believe they said this puts us in 4th place for the most suicides amongst professions, behind dentists, pharmacists, and somebody else.
Let me tell you something. First of all, I love that there's a ranking, suicide occupation rankings. We really have lists for everything now.
Yes.
But second of all, and I don't know, I mean this in a serious yet sarcastic tone, is I feel like we're really in first place if you think about in context of the fact that we don't readily have access to prescription medication.
That's true.
So because the top three are dentists, pharmacists, and physicians. Like, yeah, they're killing themselves, but they have it so easy.
Yes. Well, that's true.
You know, they can literally just turn to their little table right there, their pill table, and just pop 20 of them. Like, lawyers have to really think about killing themselves and do the act.
Yeah, well, the article says that the lawyers obviously are prone to depression. It's a very intense, stressful job. And lawyers are 3.6 times more likely to suffer from depression than non-lawyers.
Yeah, I think that it's probably higher than that. But I want to go back to this. I mean, do you disagree with me that we should get credit for being in first place, really?
Yeah, well, you know, when you take into account that we don't actually have access to medical assistance or chemical assistance, I think we're doing it the hard way.
Yeah, because it doesn't say how these people killed themselves, but I presume they'll off themselves in the easy way.
Yes.
You know,
right,
the dentist
right.
just sits in that chair, turns on the laughing gas, and it's like in Batman, remember the yes. Brand X?
Yep.
He's been taking Brand X. Gives you a smile again and again.
Yeah, this is a tough story to swallow as fact. Like, this is, and do you, when you were in law school, did they at least when I was in law school, they made a big deal out of mental health amongst lawyers, and there we had a couple people come talk to us as special guests to talk about stress and. There are help groups.
Yeah, but you went to Hofstra. I went to Penn. Nobody was worried there.
That hurts. That hurts because it's true. That stings because it's true.
Yeah. No, but I think it's a serious issue. I think it's lawyers definitely need there to be a dialogue. I mean, I think it's similar to comedians. There's a lot of depression in comedy. And it's sort of like there's a lack of mental health services geared towards lawyers, like immediately available without really having to be too proactive.
Well, that's interesting that you say that because you're right. In comedy, there is a lot of suicide and a lot of self-destructive behavior, which seems to also be pervasive in the legal field.
Yeah.
And I guess this brings us back to, are they the same kind of personalities that are drawn to these two vastly different professions?
Yeah, I thought there was an interesting quote in the article. This woman who runs the Kentucky lawyer program said there's a lot of high stress professions. Being a physician has stress. However, when the surgeon goes into the surgical suite to perform surgery, they don't send another physician in to try to kill the patient.
that's a very twisted outlook. But
yeah, I know. Like I would never even have thought of it like that, but I guess that's how she's comparing law, because it's combative and, you know, there's adversarial professions.
Yeah. Well,
but I guess
it's
the same in comedy. You know, it's very adversarial. It's you versus the crowd.
Right. And the crowd is usually stupid.
Yeah. But that's sort of, I mean, I guess that sort of accounts more in the litigation field, but not quite as much in the corporate, corporate.
Yeah, but there's always some, there's always some kind of, conflict going on in most law, whether you're, some kind of dispute resolution, just writing contracts.
Do you think it's just stress, or it's more money issues too?
I think it's a lot of money. They said in the article that a lot of people, tend to think that lawyers are powerful and make large salaries, and so lawyers feel very stressed that they have to do that and achieve these very high salaries. I also think now the stress probably comes from paying off law school debt.
Yeah,
I know. Every time,
honestly, I want somebody to write a note like blaming their law school. I don't know if I could say this on the podcast without sounding like a real piece of crap. But if somebody's out there that's going to off themselves, it would be nice if they did it in a positive way, like naming like law school creditors as the actual blame for it.
Yes, that would be, if you're going to go out, help somebody while you're doing it.
Yeah, like help us, have it be a thing where, the last 10 suicides all had the same suicide note. Sally Mae did this to me.
Well, interestingly, they also did a study at the University of Washington, and they discovered that 40% of law students suffer from depression by the time they graduate, and a lot of that
also maybe a lack of good sex.
That could be, yeah. Well, you know what? It definitely could be a lack of sex, lack of potential partners.
Yeah.
But they said that, and immediately after law school comes a high stress process of bar admission that also leads to various types of depression and mental illness.
It never ends. I mean, even these partners. I used to see these partners at 3 a.m. and on deals. And I would just be like, go home. You're an old man. This is terrible,
My theory has always been we work to live. We don't live to work.
Yeah, we're not European, We're not European. Yeah. I wish we were sometimes.
Yeah, they haven't figured. I guarantee you the suicide rate among professionals in Europe has to be significantly lower than here. Yeah,
my philosophy has always been to try and institute naps in whatever workplace I'm in. But I don't think you get to do that as an employee, just a random employee.
Matt, I fully support your nap time platform.
Yeah, but it's hard to push when you're not, an administrator or a higher up. You can't just have somebody walk in and see you napping and just be like, look, I'm trying to institute policy here.
This is mental health. This is mental health.
Mental health at work.
I think that's a great point. I have when my niece and nephew were little, I'd always see them get put to nap and they'd be screaming and crying. Could you imagine today as an adult if somebody came up to you and said it's nap time?
Oh, that would be the best. Oh,
just every day you knew 3 o'clock, you would lay down in a blanket and a soft little pad.
Let me ask you this: if they give you the option, right, of working 9 to 6:30, no nap, or 9, and then 3 to 3:30 nap till 8, and then you had to work till 8.
I would definitely take the nap.
Me too.
But it would have to be in a room where there's no computers. You can't bring your cell phone in. You literally have to lay down.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. It has to be laying down. I've tried napping in my chair, drooling on my computer.
Yeah, that's a bad look.
You're also scared that somebody's going to come in.
It needs to be completely relaxing, a real feng shui kind of moment.
Yeah. Can we press for the nap movement siestas? Let's just start a hashtag siesta, lawyer siestas,
Let's start the movement. Start it right here.
Let's start it right here. And we need your help, ladies and gentlemen. Lawyer siesta. Please tweet lawyer siesta to us, and maybe we'll give you a t-shirt. What do you think about that?
Yeah. If you tweet with the hashtag lawyer siesta and you give us, what you would do to get a lawyer siesta.
Yeah, or why you need it,
Yeah, or how badly you need it.
Yeah, lawyer siesta. Yeah,
we'll send you a t-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
Should we move on to the next story?
Yeah, let's do it.
That was too dark and depressing.
Yeah, that was kind of heavy. I'm sorry about that one.
So, you want to do the Obama one?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I don't know. Kevin didn't know this, but Obama has admitted to toking a little reefer in his day.
Obama has hit the pipe.
He's hit that hash pipe. Although I think hash and weed are different. I'm so not a drug. Not a soft drug guy.
But he's
made the statement about that he was talking recently. Was asked about alcohol and drug use, and he said that marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol.
Yeah, he said in terms of impact on the individual consumer. And he also said, and this is what where I discovered, he says, documented that I smoked pot as a kid, and I view it as a bad habit and vice, not very different from the cigarettes that I smoked as a young person up through a big chunk of my adult life. I don't think it's more dangerous than alcohol. Which I think that's a very forward-thinking, and I think that's a great view. I think that's the way people should look at pot.
Well, here's my one thing, right? And I don't want to sound too square here.
Okay.
My one issue really comes down to driving. Because we really can't detect, we can detect drinking and driving. You pull you over and, you know, you were drinking and driving, you're going to jail. We don't really have a system in place yet to stop people from driving high.
Actually, because Colorado just passed the recreational marijuana law, they do have an on-the-spot test that they can perform.
Yeah, but I don't think it's quite as accurate, is it?
It's a blood test.
Oh, so they can do a, they can require a blood test on the spot?
Yeah, yep. If they think that you you are if they think you're behaving as though you are under the influence of marijuana and you're operating a vehicle, they can require you to. I think it's like a pinprick. It's right. Like a little. It's a oh, very see, tiny see, amount
but,
of blood.
But the problem is, right? Can't you deny that? Can't you refuse to do it?
You can refuse to do it just like you can refuse to do a breathalyzer. I'm not going to lie. Colorado covered themselves pretty well when they put it into place, and that was a big concern.
That's my real concern. I think, you know, as long as you're not causing my whole thing about drugs or whatever, as long as you're not causing danger to others and externalities, you know.
Yeah, and also, this is not in any way a defense or a suggestion that you should drive while you're smoking pot.
No, well, but that's what I'm worried about. I feel
but
like
studies
people
have been done that if you drive when you're under the influence of pot, it's not nearly as dangerous as driving drunk. Not saying that you should drive while under the influence of pot.
Because you end up passing out at White Castle for 3 hours.
Well, right. You're probably driving somewhere very close to get food.
Yeah, you end up in the parking lot of White Castle falling asleep for 3 hours. And then when you drive home, you're probably okay. But, you know, look, I'm interested to see what's happening in this country. If A, are more people going to be smoking weed, you know, when it becomes more legal? I would say yes. And B, what effect is that going to have on, you know, the workplace, on just society at large? Will it have any effect?
I think maybe at the initial outset of it, as these laws, you know, proliferate throughout the country, you're going to see a lot more, you know, maybe some problems at the onset of it. But I think probably it's going to just become like anything, like smoking cigarettes or drinking alcohol. I don't think it's going to have a big societal impact outside of the benefits of it. I think it's going to produce a ton of revenue for the states that are doing it. It's going to reduce the prison populations.
Well, that's the thing. I hate that, you know, half of, you know, young black America is in jail for, you know, weed. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane. And Obama acknowledges that in this article, and that he said that he doesn't like that they're locking up kids for long stretches for just violating, you know, a pot law. And a lot of states here in New Jersey, possession of small amounts of weed has become a misdemeanor. So, you know, no jail time.
That's good. I think that's the right move. I mean, I really do. But at the same time, you know, I just hope it doesn't lead to just a less productive society. That's my bitter concern.
I don't think. And you know what? I think when you get cops to stop focusing on marijuana dealers and producers and the whole drug trade that's involved with marijuana, you could really focus on the really bad, you know, meth and heroin. There's a here in Jersey, I don't know what it's like in California, but here in Jersey, we have a huge heroin epidemic.
I don't know. I assume in California, there's definitely a lot of that.
So, you know, if you've seen the show Breaking Bad, you know how bad meth can be for you.
Yeah.
So,
I think the workers at the Nashville Hotel were a bit methy.
Yeah, I think there were some people walking around outside after you left the hotel room.
Yeah, 4 a.m. Yeah, you could hear them rumbling around. That was fun. That was great. So anyway, look, I mean, you know, I think we're heading that way. You know, I think it's inevitable. Weed's going to become legal in most states.
Yep.
And Listen, let's have a let's have a comedians of law event for legalization of pot. No, I'm kidding. I don't care one way or the other.
I would like to admit, and I'll admit it on the air, that I've never smoked pot in my life.
Is it an admission when it's really not an embarrassing thing?
No, I guess that's some people, when I tell people that, they're shocked.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, as soon as I say it, they go, dude, you got to get high with me.
Oh, with you. Yeah, you're the one.
It's going to be an especially amazing experience if I get high with whoever happens to be telling me that at the time.
Yeah, I hate – I'm a social guy. I hate smoking weed. It makes me antisocial and paranoid, and that's just – I'm not into it. But I live in L.A. Everybody's high seemingly every day. I was at a – I was watching football today, you know, and my buddy had me over, and his uncle was there, and his uncle was smoking. I always find that weird. It's like an old guy getting high.
Yeah. Yep. I used to have a friend when I was younger in high school, and I was such a dork in high school. I didn't even know like what weed smelled like or what it was. But now looking back on it, his dad was always smoking, like in the garage.
Yeah.
And now that I know what the smell is, I was like, that's what he was always doing in the garage. He'd go out.
I know, everybody was always doing drugs. The other thing is, I think this country, like, weren't the founding fathers always high all the time?
Well, they were. I know they did a lot of snuff.
Yes, yeah, snuff.
Which was apparently okay. They carried those little things around their neck and they would stick their fingers in it and shove it up their nose. That seemed weird.
Mm-hmm.
There was always some kind of drug being done. I mean, throughout human history, that's been for the Native Americans had peyote, and I mean everybody had something. You can't avoid it.
No, it's true. Peyote. I'd like to give that a try sometime.
The couple of representations on TV I've seen of doing peyote, none of it looks very pleasant.
Oh yeah, the Sopranos episode where he's on peyote, yeah. That's a pretty crazy one. Yeah. All right, let's move on. I don't want to talk about weed anymore. It's not my thing. Let's get a little lighter. You want to talk about this final one? You want to set this up?
Sure. This is we're slowly coming into baseball season if we can get out of winter. And with that in mind, a California Little League baseball coach who suffered a torn Achilles tendon is suing one of his former players for throwing his helmet during a game-ending celebration. The kid who threw the helmet is 14 years old. Turns out the gentleman, the coach, Alan Beck, is suing the child and the Little League Baseball for $500,000 in pain and suffering, in addition to $100,000 in lost wages and medical bills. That's insane.
I love this because he got his Achilles tendon torn by a kid throwing his baseball helmet, which means this kid is like has an amazing throw. I mean, he really must have rifled it.
Or our friend Alan Beck is just a huge, huge, huge wussy.
Yeah, he would be a big wussy. But if this kid has that kind of arm, somebody should sign him.
Oh, absolutely. 14 years old, you get him. Get him in the minor leagues. You know, start prepping him. That kid's got a cannon.
Yeah, he literally can throw a helmet the way Achilles used to throw his sword around on people.
I think it's funny how every week we have some kind of frivolous litigation story.
We live in the United States of America, so
it's almost our bread and butter at this point that we're just every week we just know that there's going to be some story of some jackass suing for something ridiculous.
Seems like they're doing it for our podcast. It's like, I gotta sue somebody I have to sue a child.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, look, Little League celebrations. I always wonder about this when football players have those excessive celebrations, or baseball too. You know, when they crowd, you know, like a no hitter or something. I always feel like the guy at the bottom really gets messed up.
Oh yeah, yeah. It always looks like a good idea when it starts off, but as soon as they start jumping on, a lot of the football and baseball celebrations. I always wonder when they slam their helmets together or. I always wonder exactly how safe that all is.
Oh, they go home and they cry to themselves.
Yeah.
I guess it was 7th grade or 8th grade, I was at the bottom of one of those pylons, and I really felt like I was going to die. You can't breathe at the bottom of those things. You know?
Yeah.
I was just like, I can't breathe.
And this guy wasn't even in a pylon like that. No. He just had a helmet thrown at him. I don't even understand how that happens. I mean, I'm clearly not a doctor, but – I didn't think you could rupture an Achilles tendon by getting hit in the leg with a
helmet. By the way, $100,000 in lost wages and medical bills? What is this guy? He's a Little League coach.
Little League pays big in California, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, is he also, you know, what is he, what else does he do? It just said Little League coach.
Well, whatever he's doing, it's paying him over $100,000 a year.
Yeah, the problem is the family doesn't have homeowners insurance.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Well, and it says that they've already been forced to shell out more than $4,000 in legal fees in 2 months.
Yeah. That's tough. That is real tough. $500,000 in pain and suffering. Well, look, Achilles seems very painful.
Yeah, from what I've heard, an injury to your Achilles tendon can be one of the most painful injuries you can
suffer. How much would you take to let somebody slice your Achilles tendon?
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know. Jeez. Why do you and I always do this? I'm saying it's in the seven figures.
Okay, just throw a number out.
$5 million.
Oh, that's low. I would have said 10.
Really?
I just can't. Oh, I'm cringing thinking about that. Oof.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm actually grabbing my leg.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm holding my ankle right now.
I don't even know where my Achilles tendon is, but I'm grabbing part of my leg.
That's one of those. It's real gruesome. You know, what would you rather have, an Achilles tendon or a torn ACL?
Oh, the ACL always looks really. You see that all the time in football. From what I've understood, if you cut your Achilles tendon, it snaps back up into your leg.
The whole muscle, in your calf muscle doesn't work.
It's a rubber band. But the ACL is a huge surgery too.
They're both horrible. I think I'd rather have the ACL because Achilles seems like you never fully recover.
Yeah, one of my buddies actually tore his Achilles tendon in college, and he to this day he can't lift his foot up.
Oof.
So if he holds his foot, he can point it down, but he can't lift it up. He can't point his toe towards the air.
When are we going to do something about, you know, what is a frivolous lawsuit? You know, what makes something frivolous? You know, I don't even know what the definition is anymore.
Well, I mean, I think it's like, what did the Supreme Court say about porn? You just know it when you see it.
So does this qualify in your mind as a frivolous lawsuit?
I think this is getting a little ridiculous. I mean, I guess I would have to see the guy's actual bills. I'm sure, you know, he has to produce all his bills.
Yeah.
But $600,000 total for this, what was really an accident. I'm sure the kid didn't actually launch his helmet at the coach intentionally. Yeah. That seems ridiculous.
Yeah, he got beat up by a kid.
Now, was he the coach of the team that won, which is why there was a celebration?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. You know, I wonder if there's any evidence that suggests that he was, you know, taking part in of and encouraging many of these celebrations.
Yeah, he was bouncing around, you know. I mean, it would be great if it turned out that actually it wasn't even the helmet that did it. It was his just own extremely excited celebration himself, and there was no actual injury from the helmet, and this was all really frivolous.
Yeah. They have a YouTube channel showing the kids throwing equipment during the celebration. I mean, this is what kids do. They throw helmets. They're little leaguers.
Yeah, they're 14. I mean, when you sign up to be the coach of a kid's sports team, I think you're assuming some level of risk.
You are. They're reckless. They're dangerous, those kids. They're dangerous. They're terror.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even I was probably dangerous as a 14-year-old. You got a lot of hormones going on.
Yeah.
You're confused.
You're going to hit somebody with that helmet.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that wraps up our stories for the week. You know, it seems like it was a good batch. Should we hit up the old Twitter feed?
Yeah, let's check out what's going on Twitter.
Well, we've got some new followers. We've got ABA Bar Leader. That's a nice one.
Neil, people are really starting to catch on to us.
Neil DeBalos, Philip, Abbas Kassam, Edmund Semis from Vanderbilt. He must have seen the show and enjoyed it.
Nice.
Marie Claire retweeted us. She was tweeting about studying. Jessica Mannon also was favorited us. She was also tweeting about studying. And
yeah, a lot of studying misery going on.
Gail LaMarche. Who else do we have here? Looks like it for the week. That was a pretty good week. Pretty solid week there, I think. And yes. We've got a great interview coming up with Jay Keller, who's the CEO of Case Text, 30 under 30 Forbes for law, so that's exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Comedians at Law podcast. We have a very special guest on the podcast today. He is the founder and CEO of CaseText.com. He's a Stanford Law graduate, and he was just recently named 30 under 30 in Forbes magazine for law. Welcome to the podcast, Jay Keller.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, first of all, I'm not sure if all of our listeners know what Case Text is. So why don't we just jump in with what that is?
Sure. Case Text is like a Wikipedia for law. We have, like Westlaw and LexisNexis, a comprehensive database of cases, statutes, regulations. But instead of having a kind of large paid staff of people write things like summaries of cases and doing shepherdization, we have a community of people, lawyers, law professors, law students, adding that kind of information. And the result is that it's free, that it's more interesting, and that it's going to be more up to date, and generally a kind of more interesting place to see different perspectives on what, you know, what a certain case says or what a statute means.
I personally am not, you know, in the legal field anymore as a practicing attorney. So I had never heard of this, but I think it's incredible. And my first question is, how scared are Westlaw and Lexis?
How scared are they?
Yes.
I think that, you know, like Encarta and Britannica, they're going to be scared when it's too late, right? Like yeah. They're going to be, oh, things are fine. And then 3 years from now, I wake up and say, you know, wait a second, this thing is free. We're charging, you know, firms $10 million a year. There's a huge disparity here. We've got to do something.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, before we started talking, I was going to intro it as, you know, this is like, they're the encyclopedia salesman and you're Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or like they're Zagat and we're, you know, Yelp. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And let me ask you this, and maybe this is way too personal of a question that you can't tell me the answer to, but have they approached you just to say, hey, we want to buy you out?
Yeah, we can't talk about that.
So that, yeah. That's a yes for our listeners. That's a no comment. A yes.
Yeah, no comment. Well, Take the fifth. Yeah.
I assume then it wasn't big enough of a number for you to cash out.
Well, for me also, this is kind of a moral issue. For a very long time, I felt that the law should be free, that there really it should not be behind a paywall. Understanding the law shouldn't be behind a paywall. And we take our mission to make all the world's laws free and understandable. I mean, sorry to be so serious on a comedy show, but
first of all, we do get serious when we do these interviews, and I couldn't agree more. That has always been the frustration to me, is that, you know, you go to law school and you have all this access to everything, right? You're in law school, you have all the access. Westlaw is free, Lexis is free, and then when you actually have to work and you don't really, you know, you're not a master of it, like, you could legitimately get fired by costing your firm too much money trying to get the answer to, case law.
Right. That's absolutely right. And it's, you know, part of that is, like, by design, right? So if you're one of these big companies, you give it to the students for free. It's kind of like how tobacco companies gave, you know, candy cigarettes to kids. And drug dealers give, you know, a bit of, you know, the first hit free or whatever. It's all... Yeah, all part of the design.
Totally, totally. And they give you free cupcakes in the office, too. You know, that's how they get you. So let's back up. First of all, so you went to Stanford.
Yeah.
And you met your, co-creator of this site, Joanna.
Yeah, so...
tell me about that.
So Joanna she actually is no longer with the company. She's moved on to do more interesting things back in practicing law. But we started the company together a few months ago. And she and I met actually when we were both presidents of our respective law reviews. She was the president of the Harvard Law Review, and I was the president of the Stanford Law Review. We met at a conference for law review presidents, sponsored by Westlaw, believe it or not. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you guys just hit it off and just started brainstorming?
Yeah. And then we also, not only that, but we ended up also clerking for each other, for the same judge in Boston. So we worked very closely with each other for Judge Michael Woodine on the First Circuit.
And so are you from the area, the Northern California area?
Yeah, I grew up here. I grew up in Sunnyvale, actually.
So was your, you know, to your mind, had you always sort of had a plan to be an entrepreneur, or did you stumble into this?
Far from it, actually. So, you know, it's funny how these things work out. My dad was an entrepreneur, and he had a small internet company. And I wanted nothing to do with it. You know, I mean, I was like, I thought that the worlds of policy and politics and law were much more interesting, and that's what I was going to focus on. And I, you know, went to law school with the hopes of maybe being a Senate staffer or, you know, working on like a working at a think tank or something of the sort. And it ended up interning at, you know, the White House Counsel's Office. I did a fellowship with the governor's office in Massachusetts for Deval Patrick, not for Mitt Romney, a question I get all the time. I ended up figuring, you know, finding what's maybe a cliche, but I didn't like seeing how the sausage was made.
Yeah.
You know, I came away from those experiences. And sometimes I was like, wow, like Obama is doing really amazing stuff. And sometimes I was like, wow, this is an obvious policy that we're not pursuing for some pretty stupid reasons.
Yeah.
And I realized that in the world of tech and entrepreneurship, the keys are in your hand. How much change you can affect on the world is just really up to you. And how much effort you put into it and how much thinking you put into it. And that appealed to me. That isn't the, you know, feeling you get in politics where it's kind of out of your hands. It's, you know, whatever the political, you know, climate is of the day is what's going to really affect you.
Let me ask you this: for those of, you know, so we have a lot of law student listeners. For sort of an advice question, what would you say, you know, sort of was the biggest surprise or biggest obstacle, just like some unexpected stuff about trying to launch a startup that you know had no idea about?
Oh well, a few things. First of all, it's nothing at all like law. You know, I was worked at a law firm for a couple of years before I did this. And the incentives there are to be, as you know, you kind of slow, be really methodical, really check everything twice. Law is, you know, rewards perfectionism in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And being at a startup really punishes perfectionism. You got to get to something out there as quickly as possible. You know, I coded the first version of the site myself in 2 months, and you probably didn't want to see the first version of the site.
Right. Are you a tech? Do you have a tech background that you did the coding?
Yeah. Growing up here, I have a bit of a tech background. Yeah. I grew up coding. I've been doing it since I was like 10 or something like that.
Coding in Northern California is like skateboarding in Southern California.
Yeah, exactly. Well, people up here would say that skateboarding in Northern California is also like skateboarding in Southern California. But for us nerds, yeah, that's exactly right.
Is Silicon – I just have this picture of Silicon Valley. I know there's a couple of shows actually on TV now. There's there's betas on Amazon, and then there's an HBO show coming out about Silicon Valley. Are you in the Silicon Valley scene now that you're you've got a startup? Is there like a scene where all the startup guys all hang out and know each other and stuff?
Yeah, kind of. It's a kind of a small world. So I bet you there are like really cool parties that the 21-year-olds go to with the Snapchat guys or whatever. Yeah. I play no part.
Are you not invited to those or what? You didn't get
no.
The look?
I mean, I was fortunate to go through this program called Y Combinator, which is like a startup like kind of booster. They help your company get off the ground, and through that, I've been able to meet a lot of people in this, you know, in this quote unquote startup scene, and just the stuff that they do does not seem that fun to me. You know, like the loud clubs, I'm like probably on the older side of startup founders at this point. I'm like 29, right?
All of 29,
right? And I feel like I'm like a sage grandfather compared to some of these guys. And so, you know, there's a bit of a mismatch. You know, so for me, the startup scene and actually a lot of the founders I hang out with, it isn't like crazy pool parties like Social Network where like Mark Zuckerberg's jumping off the roof into the pool or something like that. What it really is us playing a board game like Settlers of Catan on the weekend.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds
a lot
of fun. Yeah. Have you met a lot of other legal entrepreneurs in the legal field? Are there a lot?
Oh yeah, actually there are quite a few. I mean, it's a small field compared to like, say, like picture sharing or something like that. There are quite a few and they're doing really interesting work. You know, it's interesting because, first of all, one of every like two comes from Stanford Law, so I was in school with them, or they were a few years behind or ahead of me. And so there's kind of a concentration of people from that school in particular. And second, it's just like such a small world, right? You go to like one conference and you meet everybody, and then you keep on seeing the same people over and over again.
Right.
And they're cool people too. All interested in the same kind of stuff, all aiming to do the same kind of thing.
And so back to actually the practical nature of Casetext, you know, what I was wondering about,
So I go on it, right? I'm a user. I'm generating content. I write, you know, a case summary or, you know, my notes on it. Who's checking my notes?
So that's a great question. The way it works, I guess there's a kind of almost two questions there. The first is like, who's even reading this in the first place? And the answer is we have like 100,000 people who come visit us every month to do their legal research. So whatever you add is like super appreciated by our users. And in a sense, kind of like Wikipedia or even more like a site like Reddit, I don't know if you've ever used them before. Everything is moderated and edited by our community of users. So if you like look at some of the annotations that even appear on kind of the news feed on the homepage, you'll see that they have a number of upvotes associated with them. And that is the net of people who voted it up, like, hey, this should be higher up in the reading list, minus the number of people who voted it down, like, hey, this should not really be read at all.
Okay. So it's sort of self-moderated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And to be clear, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, I do read a lot of the annotations myself. Actually, I see everything as it comes in. And it's happened once or twice where I've had to just like delete something. Yeah. One guy came on, I think, to test the system, although you can never be sure if he's just kind of crazy. And was just writing, I like cookies, over and over again.
Yeah, which is not a landmark decision that I know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you may not know of it. Yeah, it's because you're not a good lawyer, but
it's the cookie monster.
Cookies. Yeah.
Cookie monster case. The hairy hand case. Cookie monster. Yeah.
He got his hairy hands when he took the cookie.
I had to put it back. So people come on and they put descriptions, and how does the search work? You literally just type it in. You just type in the name of a case or like a type of case you're looking for.
If you played with it, it will look a lot like a mix of Westlaw and Google. Mm-hmm. So like Google, you just type in whatever you're looking for, patent or Roe v. Wade or Brown v. Board or whatever it is, right? Abortion, even just a direct citation. And like Google, you don't even have to hit enter or a search button. It just kind of happens for you quickly.
Yeah.
And like Westlaw, you can like narrow things by jurisdiction. So say, like, I only want to see things in the Northern District of Oklahoma or something like that. And it'll narrow it down for you pretty easily. What's cool actually about it is, so people are doing all kinds of things on our website. One of the things they're doing is they're tagging cases. They're saying, this case is about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and False Claims Act and constitutional law, whatever. And we're able to actually use those tags to narrow your search even more. So sometimes you do a search and there'll be some kind of blue boxes on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
You click on one of those blue boxes and you'll only see things that the community has tagged with like whatever's in that blue box, like constitutional law or civil rights or something like that.
Interesting. Very interesting. So how has the word been getting out? I mean, is this just word of mouth that this behemoth has been built on?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. It's, you know, it's a lot of it's word of mouth. A lot of it actually is Google. For whatever reason, you know, there aren't that many places to get good, like, free cases that are, like, well-formatted with, like, star pagination, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So people Google for a case, and they come to us, and like, oh, this is pretty cool. And one thing that Google tracks is how long after you find something on Google, how long you stay there before you get, like, back, right? And the longer people stay on your website and, like, play around with it and use it, the more Google thinks, like, hey, this is a pretty good website. We should push it up higher in the rankings.
Interesting. Because, so time spent is a big one for them.
Is a factor, yeah. And so because we're seeing people spend, you know, many, many minutes using our site, Google's like, hey, these guys must be pretty good. And as a result, you search for one of our millions of cases, it's a pretty good chance you'll come across case text. Maybe not for like Roe v. Wade, but for like kind of what's called the long tail of cases. These cases even you and I have never heard of, but that people are still Googling for because they're citing in a brief or you know, they overheard it at a cocktail party or whatnot. And so people, I think, a lot of times initially find out about us through Google and then stick around.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so how did this Forbes, I mean, that's a pretty big feather in the cap, Forbes 30 under 30. How did that come about? I mean, were you surprised by that or, you know?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily deserved yet. We just started 6 months ago. But it's really nice to have that, you know. If anything, it's a lot of nice kind of publicity for the website and for the cause that we're trying to forward. And it's, you know, it's interesting how many people all of a sudden like take you just a little bit more seriously.
Totally. And also, you know, not to mention when you go to your 5-year reunion, you'll look like you're the man and everybody else, you know, you can look down at. That's the most important
thing. Oh, that was absolutely the purpose. Yeah.
And you have to be, that's really the most important thing for success is for reunions. Yeah. It's, you know, what have you done?
Yeah, well, since the first day of law school, they tell you that.
Yeah, entering exactly. Law students, do you see yourself ever returning to law, or is this it?
You know, so if all goes well, this is it, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully I never return to the law. But I have to say, especially for law student listeners out there, I did not, you know, I liked my law firm job. Maybe it makes me sick, but there is a place, you know, people treat you well. There are law firms out there. People treat you well. You get paid pretty well. You work on interesting stuff. So it wouldn't, for me, it wouldn't be like so bad if I had to like go back to a law firm and go kicking and screaming. You know, that is what it is. And yeah, you work long hours, but I think if you're doing anything you love, you'll probably end up working long hours. So like, yeah, I enjoy my law firm job, and I could totally see myself practicing again if I had to put food on the table.
But hopefully not. But hopefully, hopefully not.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. So you know, before I let you go, I want to make sure everybody knows, you know, how to find you. So it's just casetext.com. Tell them just, you know, what's the best way to use this site, you know?
The best way to use a site is log on. If you know of anything about a case that you're particularly interested in, just search for that case and start adding your thoughts, your analysis, add a summary of its holding. You'll help like literally thousands of people understand it or give analysis to it. And, you know, for what it's worth, it helps you establish yourself as kind of an expert in that field. You know, we've heard already, even though you've been around for 6 months, of people getting job interviews for having awesome, you know, annotations, right? So that's, as an annotator, that's a really cool way to kind of add to the site. And as a researcher, just use it like you'd use either Google to find cases or, you know, Westlaw and Lexis to kind of peruse our database of cases, search for things like, you know, patent obviousness and or whatever it is you're supposed to be searching for, and check it out. It should be interesting.
I love what you just said about people getting jobs off annotating. That reminds me of, like, you know, in my industry, like, there are people getting writing deals off their Twitters, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely happens. It's a crazy new world, you know?
I have a theory that there are people out there writing Yelp reviews for restaurants thinking they're going to land a writing gig out of it, you know? But
I have no doubt.
I've yet to see that happen.
Yeah, it's weird, actually, but one of the things we're basing this off of is these other community-based websites that have... So there's one website called Stack Exchange or Stack Overflow. It's for mostly computer programmers, but they have like one like little sub-community for math. Mm-hmm. I heard this the other day, and it blew my mind. People who are really active in that community on the Stack Exchange math thing, where you just basically answer people's questions for them, mm-hmm. That affects tenure position, like tenure decisions for professors.
Wow.
So like... Yeah, so these, like, you know, websites are becoming increasingly important for the professions, and I think that there's a place for them in law too. You know, it used to be that you'd write like a note in your student journal,
yeah,
and maybe a article for ABA journal or something like that, and that was it. I think the burden is going to be a little, you know, kind of a little bit higher for lawyers now that there are all these other ways of getting in touch with potential clients, with potential employers, et cetera.
I think that's interesting. Yeah. I think that's sort of a good tip. You know, to leave it on is, you know, there are many ways, especially in this increasingly tough legal market, to stand out. And, you know, that's sort of an innovative way for, law students and young lawyers.
Something we totally did not anticipate. We thought this would be kind of a cool way for people to share information, and it ended up being something totally different, you know, or more than what we thought.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this. That was a pretty good interview, huh, Kev?
It was a pretty good week. You know, we're always excited to do shows everywhere across the country. So that's, you know, what we do this for.
Yeah, and make sure, you know, check us out on Facebook and you can tweet at us. You can also check out, like Matt said, our new site, Only in Law School, which has a rampant following and is growing every day. And you can tweet at us. If you're tweeting us at Only in Law School, shoot us what you're suffering through in law school. Tell us why you're miserable. That's what we like to hear. We want to be able to share in your misery.
Yeah, and / alleviate some of it.
Yeah, and that's what we're really here to do. We're, you know, with a little humor, we've all been there. We've all, you know, gone through law school. We've passed the bar. We know what it's like. It sucks, and you're not alone.
Yeah, I can't believe I passed the bar.
Neither can I.
It's amazing. Anyway, so that's it for this week, and Kev, we'll talk next week.
Awesome, Matt. Good episode. Bye.